Welcome everyone.
One of your teammates.
Welcome everyone to the technical committee meeting. Welcome to staff, councillors. No one from the public. We have an apologies from, or two apologies, one from Councillor Robertson, one from Councillor Bell. I'll move that those apologies be accepted. Second by Councillor Lawton. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Leave of absence. There are no requests. Attendance, the appropriate staff in attendance. Confirmation of the agenda. No changes promoted for any reason of, such as urgency. Conflict of interest, just the reminder, the standard reminder. We have no public forum. Confirmation of the minutes from the 1st of August 2019. I'll move that they received and confirm as true and correct, second by Councillor Hope. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Mm-hmm.
Against, carried. In terms of the list of actions, there any questions there? We take it as read. One has been completed. It's the one with regards to Lake Snow, or the letters going to the various ministers with regards to combating the threat of Lake Snow. Any questions, queries? Everyone comfortable? Councillor Hope?
I just want to ask you that last one with Glenview Forest. It says, Council requests the report to be provided to see City Forest and Southern Wood Council. Are we... It was June, so we're pretty sure that's been sent.
That was done. Yeah. I did that myself.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
okay. Yeah,
so it's pretty complete.
Yeah. It's completed.
Sorry,
right.
I did that, yeah.
No, sorry, I just wondered.
Thank you all.
Thank you for that.
Sorry,
yeah. Excellent. That's noted. No other queries, Councillor Laws.
Yes, it is to do with Lake Snow in actual fact. Now, as I understand, we wrote a letter to the Minister, is that right?
Yes, to three ministers, my understanding.
Three ministers.
Biosecurity, Environment and Local Government.
And one of them's written back and said it's under... basically leaving it to us, is that right? Is that correct? Yes. Not our problem, leave it to us. Well, how do we feel about that?
And was that the Minister of Environment?
No.
Biosecurity?
If I'm correct, it was Damien O'Connor,
yes,
who, from MPI, who wrote back to us. The other two ministers said, as often tends to happen, this falls into Minister O'Connor's area of responsibility. We defer to him. He wrote back and said, this is kind of a problem that's going on, but actually no one knows what to do about it really.
It's just this. Just
and they're not really taking any further action.
Sorry, my mistake. Liz has just pointed out that the action list I was looking at was from the minutes of the 1st of August. So, so we go to page 7. The action list is the... Sorry, my apologies. So, have we seen that letter, if it's been circulated?
It got sent to us about a week ago.
Oh, really? Sorry.
You just don't read them, do you?
Well, I didn't read that
one.
Sorry. Right, moving on.
But so that leads us to the thing. Oh, listen, maybe it's a council thing, but... I'd love an update on where we are with this process because it just seems slipping off for me. Where are we? And I expected to see it here about the progress that we were making with the other regional councils.
Now, remember we had this discussion
last time.
6 weeks ago. Correct. And we agreed, Dr. Palmer agreed that, or we agreed as a council, that any update would only come to this table if there was an update, there was new information to be shared with us. That's my understanding where we got to. Is that your understanding, Dr. Palmer?
Well, wait on. We invited regional councils and the MPI to formally endorse and support our proposed research program. That was 6 weeks ago. What's happened?
So, Mr. Chairman, maybe I can speak to that.
Dr. Palmer.
As I'd indicated to committee previously, the regional councils have a bioscience, biocontrol research program collectively. And I said previously that I would ensure that the Lake Snow research was added into consideration of the review of that program, which takes place every year about October. And so that has happened. I was at the biomanagers meeting last week and received confirmation that that's in the mix of consideration of other research priorities of the sector in respect of biocontrol. So, and I can update committee
as and when
that develops.
Thank you.
So in October, that meeting will happen. When in October?
I don't have a precise...
Oh, I guess we'll have in the first committee round after the election, we'll have the opportunity to assess, won't we?
Yes, I can. I will bring a...
we get voted on.
Well, your new governance.
The new council will be updated once there has been some clarity around whether this research will be a go or not.
Yes, I'll bring an update to the relevant committee in the new triennium, first round.
So it's essentially in a competing against other potential research projects. Is that correct?
It's correct, and that's the proper way to ensure that we get a sector view of where this sits in terms of priority.
Yeah. However, I'm just flagging now, for those of you who might be re-elected, or us who may be, that if the answer is no, then we're going to have to make a decision whether we go it alone. Aren't we? But I'm just flagging that now.
Well, if I can help. Through the chair. I don't think we've fully exhausted everything, necessarily.
Oh,
so the minister said no, the regional sector will have a look at it. I just need to warn you that the business plan for the regional sector is well oversubscribed. So unless individual councils are going to stick their hands in their pocket and contribute more money, it's oversubscribed by about $1 million at this point. So that may or may not affect the outcome of the research. I think another consideration would be about whether or not there's an option for some partnering with TAs who have impacts. Because in our own region, for example, and you may have canvassed this before, but in our own region we know that TAs have impacts as a result of like snow on pumps and various other things.
Yep.
So that's perhaps one thing we haven't thought about, is whether or not it's a mayoral forum discussion. And as a part of that, perhaps there's a willingness or not to collaborate and maybe make a contribution.
Good idea.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to the report, matters for noting. We've got Dr. Palmer's report to the committee. We'll just work our way down the list. And we've got Ben with us today with regards to the Roxburgh debris flow update. So jump in when we get down to that topic and anything else you want to contribute as well, Ben. So Lake Hayes consultation, as the report outlines, the intervention options have been consulted on a couple of occasions. Once in August and once early September. I understand Councillor Lawton perhaps attended the August session. You did. Is there anything you'd like to say? And just before you do, the one thing that we did note in this update was that key concern coming from the attendees was around the nutrients entering the lake from the catchment. That seems to be the big focus that's come out of this. Obviously, the intervention options are a focus, but clearly this overarching... what's going on in the catchment is something that the community are concerned about. But Councillor Lawton, did you want to make any comment?
Yep. Just to start off with, that the community is really excited that there's actually something happening. They're really happy to see us there and to be working on a plan together, so that's really fantastic. They are really aware that they don't want to waste money by trying to fix a problem that continues. So having a catchment view of the problem is something that they're really interested in and will continue to push for. The wetlands project that they've got going on is keeping them really well focused on, sort of the low-hanging fruit. So how to create better value, capturing those nutrients before they hit the lake, but they're keen to see how to stop the nutrients getting there in the first place. They were really interested. It was fantastic to have all three of the experts in the room. So we had everyone there to give different perspectives on each of the options, which confused some people, but that's okay. It really did lend to a conversation, as well as the new monitoring buoy data, which is going through its usual teething problems in terms of getting set up and having data being reported back, but will be an invaluable source of information to feed into also which will be the best option for the lake in the long term. It highlights that, I'm sure, Ben, you can talk to this as well, around the value of having that data to inform which options are best. And I do want to bring up another point, which I'm hoping Gavin or Ben you could talk to as well, which is in relation to the culvert under the road. So for those of you that don't know, the lake's been higher over the last 12 months than it has been in most of the living memory of people who live around it, because the water's not flushing out as quickly and it's flooding the track. And it's become one of the other big issues that was raised consistently across both of all four of the sessions when I was there, was what are we going to do about it, which is obviously needs conversations with NZTA to find a resolution for that. So that's the report back, but I just really wanted to highlight how, happy that with, the community is that ORC is there having the conversation and trying to find solutions. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lawton. Ben, I think you attended as well, and I'm not sure, Gavin, you were both there. So did you want to make some comment with regards to consultation and just how things are panning out and any other relevant information you want to share with us?
Just, Mr. Chairman, I think Councillor Lawton's summary is a very good one. And we're just working through analysing the submissions and we'll report in due course. The other thing I'd like to note is just in my report at paragraph 6, I failed to mention that Department of Conservation is another co-funder of the wetland study that Councillor Lawton referred to. I should have said that.
Thanks, Dr. Palmer. Ben, was there anything you wanted to add before I go to Councillor Scott?
It's been well summarised. Okay.
Councillor Scott, and then Councillor Hope.
Yeah, no, thank you. Paragraph 5, where it says, a key concern among those attending the sessions and those who have provided feedback to address the nutrients entering the lake rather than the historic accumulation. Like, that might be a key concern, but isn't there fundamental focus on both of them? Not one or the other, but on both. That's my first point. And I'm actually interested in terms of following on from what Gavin said in terms of what are the next steps until our next annual plan. So firstly, isn't there focus on both these issues? Surely to goodness, the existing situation of the lake plus the catchment.
Not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. And what are the next steps until the annual plan?
Dr. Palmer.
Yeah, so through you, Mr. Chairman, you're quite right. It's a package of initiatives. It's not an either or. It's probably both. Should be both. The consultation, though, was targeted around one of them because there are some choices of method.
Yeah.
And we were wanting some feedback on preferences and anything that the community thought should be off the table, because the more we can take off the table in terms of the interventions, it makes it easier to progress to the next stage, one or two options in terms of firming up how you might fund it. So that was the focus. The next steps are to develop up that package.
Package, yeah.
And bring it back.
With costs, yes, estimates?
Yes, with costs, and then some decisions to be made about how you will fund, how it could be funded.
Yeah, and are we looking at the potential for the next annual plan to have some actions moving forward in terms of implementation?
Yes, certainly it's synchronised with development of the next annual plan, because there was no funding provision made because we weren't sure what it is that could be funded. We now have hopefully a clearer picture through the consultation. As to implementation, if it is any of the intervention methods, those are multi-year
Definitely. Things. But in terms of, commencing, we're not going to sit on our hands. It'll be something in the annual plan, yeah?
Well, that's a matter to be decided in terms of, pace and priority and how this fits with everything else.
Yep. And to be fair, when we met with members of the Friends of Lake Hayes during our council tour, yep, they made it pretty clear that they were also focused on the catchment rather than just the intervention for the lake. Sorry, Councillor Hope.
That's right. My question was just really to the three of you that were there, Councillor Lawton as well. Was there anything actually that you learnt that you didn't know before? Because it's always interesting when you come to these days and somebody might say something that prompts something that you often don't know. I just wondered, did you want to share it with?
Yeah, thanks. A really important issue, actually, that we haven't touched on. So you'll all know Dr. John, Mr. Greaves' man. Someone help me. John Darby. Not the famous, you know, well-to-do John Darby, the other one. So the Greaves' man, and he was highlighting the large number of quite rare birds that actually use Lake Hayes, and we don't have a good understanding in terms of a biodiversity baseline for the lake. So we don't actually also really understand the impacts of any of those remedial options on the freshwater life of that lake. So he was really concerned that we're going to delve into doing something that we don't fully understand the implications of. And so he's been, I know, connected up with staff to provide some of that information to us, because he's actually been monitoring for, I don't know, a couple of decades anyway. So to make sure that we've got that information on file, but then, you know, what are we going to do to make sure that we understand, you know, whatever we do has, if there's any implications, I think was a really important point. But he's a fountain of knowledge. So to capture that would be actually invaluable in the first place.
Ian and Dr. Palmer, was there anything you wanted to add to the question from Councillor Hope? Anything new out of the left field, so to speak?
Probably what impressed me was with Dr. Max Gibbs there from NIWA, who's a limnologist or lake expert, and we had the live feed of the buoy data coming on, and just having him explain it, walking through it, the different parameters and what they meant, and it was like he was just like reading a book, watching this data come off. So I think it'll be really valuable data set for those experts to learn more about how the lake functions as Excellent. That data continues to accumulate.
Good. And at some point in the future, it will come across this table, so yep, it'll be really useful for us to understand, even though we're lay people in that space, but it would be good to get a chance to have a further understanding. Dr. Palmer, anything else you wanted to add?
Probably just... it may be we've framed this as a water quality improvement project, and I just wonder whether or not it's better framed as a biodiversity project, of which water quality improvement is a subset. So it just got me thinking a little bit about the problem definition, and that's obviously something to come back to council. We might re-pitch it differently. I don't know, just thinking it through.
Very good. Councillor Laws.
Well, I mean, the feedback that I was looking for was Alum. Did you get feedback whether or not that was still a viable option? Because it's still probably the most viable option we've got at the moment. LMC, you?
It was probably the only one that I heard from the community to say an absolute no. We're not interested in more chemicals going into our
short and medium term solutions then.
Yep.
Yeah. Friends of Lake Hayes, the last time I had a conversation with three or four of them were... through you, Mr. Chairman, talking about the catchment options and managing the inputs rather than trying to intervene in some way, such as alum or anything else.
But that's crazy stuff, because the lake is where it is now. Mm-hmm. Sure, we can stop more stuff coming in, but we've got a lake that at the moment is effectively dead. So we've actually got to
harsh.
All right, but you know what I mean. We've got to try and deal with the phosphorus and the nitrogen and everything else that's in there now. We've got to trap those. I mean, what are they going to use for a flocculant?
That's one of the options that this process is fleshing out, isn't it?
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. I think we need to wait for the next stage to be able to, I suppose, have a further discussion about the viable options, the costs, and everything else that goes with it. And if sounds like one option could be falling off the table. Well, if that report comes without the chemical type regime, well and good. If the community have given a clear signal that they're not interested, well, it certainly narrows down, going forward. Anyway, any other further questions on that topic?
Good.
If not, moving on to the stock effluent disposal facilities. Councillor Lawton.
Sorry, but can I have my questioner answered about the culvert?
Oh, okay. So this is about the water not getting away as quick as it normally has done in the past?
Yeah, and I'll just carry on with that I've had a couple of requests, as have Gavin and the council, to follow this up through the Wakatipu Restoration Society Trust, as well as the Queensland Lakes District Council, have both requested that we have a think about what our role is in this and to answer whether or not we actually are going to do anything.
So just remind us the ownership of the culvert?
NZTA.
Yes, so Lake Hayes is a single outlet, Hayes Creek, which discharges the Carrail River. State Highway 6 crosses Hayes Creek, and there's a culvert under the road. It's about 900 millimetres diameter, something like that. The culvert's part of the state highway and is owned by NZTA. In terms of the culvert and the channel approaching the culvert and the channel exiting the culvert, it's all functioning properly. There are no blockages. There have, from time to time, been partial blockages, but we've inspected it several times. We've done some work in the channel to remove obstructions, but it's actually functioning as intended. There is a view in the community that lake levels are higher now than they have been in the past. It seems that that's because rain events, although they've not had high intensity, the volume of water and the spacing between rain events is such that there's been a high volume of water entering the lake, causing it to remain higher for longer than it has in the past. So there has been discussion around mitigating that by making the outlet bigger. As I said, it's owned by NZTA. It's not owned by this council. We don't have a flood scheme there or a drainage scheme, so we've got no mechanism for funding a new piece of capital work or some large-scale capital work or maintenance work. Council could do that. Council could choose to go through the process of getting permissions from NZTA and consenting and the like to augment the existing culvert or replace it if it wished to. It wouldn't be a cheap exercise. I haven't done precise numbers, but I'm thinking it's at least six figures to get to the point of awarding a construction contract. It would be technically a bit complex. So getting to the point of starting construction of something, you know, six figures, quite expensive, and you have to think about how you funded it. So council could choose to investigate what those options might be, but I recommend it only does that if it's genuinely committed to construction all the way through. Otherwise, you're investing money in an investigation that someone else may not wish to implement. We've discussed the matter with NZTA, and they have no plans to upgrade the culvert. From their perspective, it's functioning properly from a state highway perspective. So that's where it sits at the moment. It's really a matter of, is there an appetite from this council to introduce it into a draft annual plan, because we don't have any funding at the moment for any sort of investigation or analysis of options, even the problem definition. We have no funding at the moment for that. So that's my thinking at the minute, is, you know, introduce it into an annual plan, but only if there's an appetite to take it all away.
Yeah. So the difference that the community have honed in on, does it just reflect a very wet season, i.e., you know, this time last year we had a very wet spring, for example. So is there something else that's changed as well, other than seasonal influence, i.e. a significant amount of rain over a longer period of time, i.e. wet season?
It seems to be related to rainfall. Certainly the outlet, we've looked at it extensively and it's functioning properly. So it can't be an outflow problem. It can only be an inflow problem. So it does seem to be to do with rainfall patterns. But again, we haven't investigated it in detail because we don't actually have an annual plan project to investigate this issue.
Thank you. I've got Councillor Woodhead, Councillor Scott and Councillor Lawton.
The other thing that's changed here is there is Department of Conservation infrastructure around the lake in the form of a walkway, some of which is boardwalk, some of which, after construction, now goes underwater when the lake's a wee bit higher. So community awareness of this is much higher as a result of that. Unfortunately, we don't have any long-term data to actually look back and say, well, actually, the lake's done this in the past and get used to it, shall we say. Or is it, changing weather patterns, rainfall falling as rain now instead of snow? I don't know. There's certainly some heightened, in my view, community awareness of it as a result of the walking track.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Scott and Councillor Moore.
Yeah, my question is it relevant to the issue of the water quality in the lake? You might find, for example, it's just cheaper to put the track where it maybe should always have been put, to have some buffer between, the potential height of the lake or not. So what's the answer to that? Is it relevant to the water quality issue with the lake? Because we have talked about inflows and outflows being one of the parameters in terms of improving the lake.
Mr. Chairman, it's relevant to the degree that one of the options being considered as the augmentation issue. So I think there's some relevance there, whether it requires a increased outlet structure to offset any effects, I don't know, it's early days. My initial response to this was, if the problem is a walkway track issue, then think about relocation. And I did raise that with Department of Conservation, and they have done some things there, but I'm not sure that response has been fully exhausted in terms of the proper way of dealing with the lake level issue, although these other issues around habitat and other things have come into play more recently.
Yeah, but my view is you should at least refer to it. When you come back with your package, you should at least refer to it or say, we don't think it's relevant to the water quality issue, therefore we haven't considered another options could be relocation to the track, or if there's some benefit by increasing the culvert size in terms of, for example, we've paid quite a bit of money to connect to the water in potential water inflow, haven't we?
Yep, we have.
At the golf course.
Yep.
And if we turn that on, what's the impact going to be on the culvert then? Mm. What's the answer to that?
I don't have that. I don't have those figures on hand. But there's a whole lot of issues in there.
But we need to have our head around that, because it's either relevant or it's not.
It makes some good points there, Councillor Scott, and I'm sure Dr. Palmer has picked up on that, and it'll form the basis of a report that comes back to us at a future date. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. So good points raised, and those are all the concerns, as well as for the Reforestation Trust. They've thought they had a good handle on the level of the lake, and given that it's now above what they thought that it was as of average, has flooded all of their trees, or a lot of them, and they've actually lost a huge amount of investment that they've made in that area. So they're concerned about that as well. What I'd like to propose as an action to go on the action list is that we do follow up with those other groups to look at what those options are and actually have a think around which one's going to be most affordable to the ratepayer, because what we're all doing is holding on to our own package of funds, when in fact the ratepayers are the same. So if it's increasing the height of the walking track, or if it's changing the culvert, and particularly if it's actually going to affect the augmentation option, then all of these things need to be considered, and it sounds like, to me, the organisations need to sit down and have a conversation, which would be at least a good start, rather than everyone just putting hands off. Because if you need to do anything, it's going to take probably another 12 months at least. And by that time, we might have another idea of actually what's causing the flooding. But if we all just continue just not do anything, it's never going to get fixed. People are going to continue to be concerned. Currently, the marathon can't run when the lake's high because the track's, So there's actually a whole lot of flow-on effects to this, and we're just another one of the organisations going, I don't want to touch it because it might end up costing us something. So we need to make... I'd like to see a plan of some sort of way of figuring out which option's going to... we should go with, and agree as organisations to do that.
there was a general agreement with what Councillor Lawton has just suggested with regards to bringing it in with the report that will come back to us on the intervention methods. Chief Executive.
It's not that, you know, obviously there's an issue, and it's not that we, I'm suggesting that we don't want to help, but I do think that we have actually done a whole lot of things in order to try and at least get some kind of solution for this issue. And when you look at what we're trying to do for Lake Hayes overall, when you look at the treatment options and the 12,000 we've put into the wetland study, which will inform the upper catchment solutions, I think we've got to just be really careful about what our role is. And I'm not sure that our role is to sort out the fact that there's a culvert that is overflowing at the moment. The culvert's owned by NZTA, the track is owned as DOC's responsibility. Are we buying ourselves a problem that's not really our problem? And my sense is there isn't an appetite from NZTA, for example, so if we really want to go down this track, then we're up for hundreds of thousands of dollars to sort it out. So I suppose I don't want to seem unsympathetic, but at the same time I'm saying I think we need to look at what our priorities are. We've got a whole lot on our plate, not just with this issue, but with everything that's coming at us and drain on resources. And I'm just not sure that we should necessarily take on this particular issue as an ORC issue.
Yeah, I suppose at this point, at this table, I suppose we are receiving information about something I certainly wasn't aware of until this discussion today. And until we fully understand, A, what the issue is, and as Councillor Scott has alluded to, is there a relationship with this issue and the intervention methods? So if there's not, that's fine,
yeah,
and end of story. But I think we need to either have something from Dr. Palmer that covers off this topic, whether that we may be involved in the future if deemed necessary or not, but we need to make that call. And I hear what the Chief Executive is saying. Well, at this point, it's a low priority, but I don't know whether the governance arm has a good enough understanding to sort of say, well, let's back off and leave as is. But Dr. Palmer?
Well, if it would be helpful, we've received some written correspondence on the matter which sets out the concerns. We'll share that with you.
We'd appreciate that. I thought that's what
that
I sense.
And can we get back to those other partners instead of just not getting back to them? Get back to them and say, we're doing this and we're not doing this, because at the moment no one's saying anything and they're still looking at us. That's what I kept hearing at the drop-in session. What are ORC doing about it? And I didn't have an answer. So we just got to be really clear. That's all I'm asking for. If we've got appetite, let's do something. If we don't, we need to tell people.
So I saw Mike Camp briefly on Monday. He asked me about this.
The chair of Lake Hayes.
My response to that was, I understood Gavin had been on site, he'd had some conversations, but the culvert was NZTA's, and that was about where I thought it was. Gavin and I have crossed over on this in terms of checking that was correct, but that's what I had relayed to Mike.
Yep.
But is the culvert big enough if we start putting more water into that lake for it to go out to meet their needs? Nobody's answered that, but we seem to be quite happy to dismiss it.
No, it's not that I wish to dismiss it. That was the point I was going to make. I think they're two separate issues. There is an issue of overflow right now that has absolutely nothing to do with anything that we are doing that needs to be resolved. Whether or not we make a contribution, which means that we need to think about how that might impact the culvert in the future, I think that's a completely separate matter.
Okay. Councillor Laws and then Councillor Deaker.
I just want to clarify something, please, because maybe this has moved on and I've sort of just went through 5 minutes of complete non-comprehension. But my understanding is that we've asked some experts, Schnellenberg and others, to come up with a remediation plan for us, and we're consulting on that remediation plan with the community. And then we're going to have a report that comes back to say, this is what we can do, and this is what the budget is, and these are the options available to you. Have I got that right?
Yes, it'll be a package that will come back, and hopefully when we go through the submissions, we will be able to have excluded some of the possibilities and converge to hopefully one or two.
Or, I don't know if you need to narrow it that much, but okay. But when's that going to happen?
I would expect we can bring that back to the first or second committee round in the new triennium. It depends a little bit on what we get back from the submissions, because if there's a preference around catchment management, we're going to have to turn our mind to precisely what does that look like. But it's synchronised with the annual plan. The intention is that we would have enough information to feed into the next annual plan preparation cycle.
Right.
Yeah.
So really, in a funny sort of way, the culvert will be part of the detail of that, won't it?
No, it won't. No. The culvert, as Mrs. Gardner has said, they are two very separate issues. The culvert is only relevant to remediation in the sense that one possibility is we sometimes,
exactly,
not all the time, put an extra 200 litres a second of water into the lake. Now, that inflow can actually be managed so that it doesn't exacerbate flooding around, you know, it's controllable. There are timing issues. It may mean that there's zero effect on flooding, or it might have a very small effect on flooding, and we can deal with how we might mitigate that when we think about the methods. The culvert issue is something entirely different. It is not being addressed in the package that is coming back to you, because it's an entirely separate issue, as Mrs. Gardner has said.
Okay. Councillor Deacon, then Councillor Brown.
I don't know whether this is helpful or not, but I've just had a look at the rainfall data for Queenstown, which is the nearest station I could find. And sure enough, in the last 12 months, since September last year, there have been consistently high rainfalls per month right through till now, which tends to back up what Gavin said a long time ago, that this is the lake is simply reflecting what's happened to rainfall in that area in the last 12 months. The lake is high and it's been sustained at a high level by yet more rain. Now, some would argue that this is a climate change effect, wetter in the west, drier in the east, but it's probably too short a term. Put it down to that.
Thank you, Councillor Brown.
Yeah, I was just going to mention the fact that I know NIWA, that is one of their predictions with climate change, that it will get wetter in the east, and I mean wetter in the west and drier in the east. So, you know, it could well be a long-term trend. The other thing, if the culvert's too small, doesn't that negate the ability to flush the lake?
Dr. Palmer?
Is what the augmentation's meant to do?
Not really. What it really, I mean, the culvert is not too small. We need to be really clear around that. The culvert is not too small. What happens is the lake just starts to operate and fluctuate around a higher average level, if you like. So the through flow ought to be about the same in the future. And this is the problem. The problem is the lake is now kind of temporarily developed a new temporary kind of average level, and then that will go back to what it was before because it's driven by rainfall, an unusually wet season.
But you assume it's an unusually wet season. It may in fact be the new norm,
exactly.
But we don't know that.
That's true.
So can we assume as a committee when this report comes to us on the intervention methods, let's say there's one or two, settled on one or two, there will be some commentary in there about the culvert, accepting we don't own it, understand that, but and some recommendation from staff, basically around the discussion we've had now with the staff views in that paper. So then when we've got all the information in front of us, it clearly states that this is the view of staff with regards to the culvert. And is there anything wrong with having that and accepting it's not... It's connected, but it's clearly there's two issues, and I accept what you've said, Dr. Palmer, and what the Chief has said as well. But all I want to see is that the committee is well informed about the culvert issue, and so that we have all the information we require when we make the call on the intervention methods further down the track. Is that not an unreasonable request?
You'll have sufficient information to make a call on the intervention method. I'll provide you the correspondence we've received, which sets out the concerns of stakeholders. But I need to be really clear I'm not bringing back to you an investigation of alternative culvert sizes or inflow management, because that will require resource that I do not have at the minute.
No, that's fair enough. But what I've heard today is the walkway could well have been put at too low a point. And what I'm looking for is some way of mitigating the issues, A, with the walkway, with the planting. It may not be our responsibility, but at least we need to make a comment and a judgment call and say, well, look, department, sorry, you need to review your location of your walkway or whatever. I'm not asking for an investigation. I'm just asking for this committee to be informed about where this particular issue is at and your recommendation about where it should go.
Well, I've already made a recommendation about how you might wish to handle it, which is, but fundamentally, is this a problem that this council should own? Is it a problem even worth solving? This is not an issue of public safety. From a and we don't eliminate flood risk everywhere. We've got to keep the thing in context about what is the problem and what is the scale around that.
Okay, so there'll be correspondence about this particular issue that within the report that comes back to us, just as long as we're informed with regards to, you know, whatever the discussion has been with third parties. Is that not unreasonable?
What I can do, Mr. Chairman, is we will tomorrow give you the correspondence.
Okay.
We can provide an update to the next committee round in terms of maybe a summary of what we've done to date, because we have done things. So I can summarise that in my next report to whichever committee. At that point, the new committee, whatever it is, will have been informed, having read the correspondence.
Thank you. Councillor Lawton, and then we'll wrap this up.
Happy to. So, yes, and I would really like to see, and I'm not going to be here, but actually an opportunity for the council to make a call. Are we going to have any role to play in this, including getting the partners together to have a conversation about the problem? Because actually it's an assessment of risk, safety, all of those things. And someone needs to make a call, we actually need to say we are or are not going to be part of this conversation. And so once we've got all the information, we would be able to make that call. So I'd like some way of doing that when that information comes to the council. And I would like an update sent back to the Wakatipu Forest Trust, Reforestation Trust, who have sent us a letter asking us for our opinion and our help on something. Instead of not answering them officially, that we actually get back to them, because that's what they would like us to do. And so far I haven't seen any response to their correspondence, and I don't think it's okay for them to just ignore letters. So that's what I would like to see.
Who is this? I don't have the letter.
It was emailed to you and to Chair Woodhead and to Gavin.
Okay.
So I have the letter. I will respond.
Thank you.
I was waiting to try and find a constructive way of responding other than saying it's not our culvert and we don't have a flood scheme.
So if you don't have a budget for it and you need an answer, it needs to come back to this table to have a discussion, which is what I've now had to raise. It somehow... We are very good at not answering these sorts of things and somehow not getting decisions made. That's what I've been trying to highlight, particularly again through this discussion. So I'd really appreciate that information gets back to the community so that they don't keep coming up to us and asking us why we haven't responded.
Apologies for not responding. We will respond, and we will do as Dr. Palmer has committed. My advice would remain the same, that this isn't an issue for us to be leading
let's
on.
Let's tell them that. Yep, that's all I'm asking.
Final word, Councillor Scott.
It's a question. You know, I would have thought, you know, a project like this, there's a lot of stakeholders, right? You know, you've got the Friends of Lake Hayes, you've got the ORC, you've got the QLDC, you've got DOC, and you've got all the other ones. And I would have thought, honestly, that from time to time all these stakeholders would meet. And in fact, there might even be a chair of that group. And and that we just work as a constructive team to solve these things as opposed to disappearing into a rabbit hole from time to time because we might find ourselves overcommitted. Of course, there's, you know, like it's, and like it seems to me we're just not looking at this right. It's a project, we're contributing. Of course, we're not going to do it. It's just an agenda item. You know, like Trevor's building project, it's just an agenda item. Okay, guys, this is not our responsibility. We may have some impact on it. We'll just park it. Okay, what are you doing? We got this, boom, boom, boom. Are we in that space or are we just sort of a bunch of academics?
I think that's already been done.
Good.
Yeah.
So well, that's an agenda what I'm saying item. To you is I think Gavin's done that multiple times. He's good. Been yeah, on yeah, site. Yeah. He's done all of that. All I'm trying to say is...
it was never said.
I'm very helpful. I'm very willing to be helpful, but at the same time,
yeah,
I'm mindful about the load that the organisation has and where the priorities sit.
Yeah.
And to my mind, if we don't own the culvert, if we don't have a flood scheme and the yeah, track's not ours, it's not our issue.
Okay. Well, fair enough. So raise it at the next project meeting. Yep.
Okay. Let's move on. Stock truck effluent disposal sites. Just an update there. I don't want to relitigate the debate that we've had previously because I know Councillor Woodhead would perhaps like to discuss it. But no, but seriously, Councillor Woodhead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. There is something to discuss here, and there is a dereliction of duty if we do not. We made a decision on the basis of a certain set of circumstances. We have made no progress, significant progress, to advance the alternative. The circumstances have changed dramatically. We must discuss it.
Sorry, Councillor Kempton, look, to be perfectly honest, I hear what you're saying, but the way I read the report, that there is dialogue with the landowner adjacent to the terrace site, which is NZTA, and that's my understanding, the first step in the process, and until that dialogue is complete, I accept there may not be a lot of progress, but it is progress.
Again, I disagree entirely with that, and I think that it is dereliction of duty. There are many things that happen where they are recoverable when circumstances change, and this is just one of those, potentially recoverable, and I think it needs to be debated.
Councillor Kempton, if you've got something you'd like to move, could you write it down and give it to Liz?
I don't need to write it down.
Okay.
Right, but I also want to speak to it.
Well, you need to give us an idea what's going to be put on the table before you speak
what
to it.
What is going to be put on the table,
please,
is a motion that we cease work on the terrace site, complete detailed design for a stead on the Rippenvale Strait in the absence of the poplars, and provide CODC with plans and proceed to construction under the existing contract, because there is an existing contract which allows us to go straight and do that. And I want to speak to that.
Okay. Is there a seconder for that
motion?
Yes,
there is.
I'm not sure whether I should say thank you, Councillor Woodhead, or not. But thank you, Councillor. So, Councillor Kempton.
Okay. I recall hearing, especially from Councillor next to me, that newlywedded couples... actually had their photos taken alongside these poplars. All right, now they were taking some risk because the poplars were in danger of falling, as all old poplars are, and they do. And in fact, not so long ago, one fell on Dalefield Road, squashed a car and killed, I think, one or two people. So it is important, it is not surprising that these have been cut down. In any event, this was apparently one of the most iconic tourist experiences in the autumn in central Otago. And that was the big reason why, the biggest reason why we should not to proceed to denigrate it. All right? It has gone. And there are a few left at the other end, similar age, similar size. I suspect they'll go soon too. So they will not be there. Now, when they were cut down, there was barely a whimper. CODC, they told us you didn't touch that strait. We haven't heard anything from them. Okay, they might have known the reason, they might not have, because they were NZTA's trees on NZTA's land. They're gone. Right, now, going well back, we had this Rippenvale Strait stead on our program for at least two annual plans. Not a suggestion from council that there was a problem with it. All right? Then we had some murmurings from the good burghers of Cromwell, and we had CODC jumping up and down, and at the same time, in my view, we're conflating another issue, which was the maintenance cost associated with these things. So they thought, damn it, we'll do our best to be destructive, or at least not to be not constructive. All right? Now, we then commissioned a report for $35,000 it cost us from Opus Consultants to show us categorically that this was the best site from a network perspective and a road safety perspective.
It was the second preferred site.
Hang on a moment. There have been two reports. That was the first report. Well, we got a second report, right, which didn't contradict the first report, and in my view, I think was significantly misinterpreted by this council. In any event, I go back to where I started. There is a subdivision apparently going to be built opposite this. If it ever is built, and I think if we've been following that, it won't be, certainly not in its current form, there are many very good ways in which we see the impact of roading activities separated from subdivisions. That mitigation is easy. We see it everywhere we go. Great piles of earth, all sorts of things. Okay? Don't think that's an issue at all. And to my mind, we've got a much better opportunity to take a greenfields approach to mitigation ourselves. Don't have the poplars there. We can just decide how we make this thing look right. So there are no planning barriers at all to doing it. The professional reporting we've had, and the the consultation that we've had with the major road users, particularly the Road Transport Association, say this is the best site. Remember what we're doing. The prime tourist route is through the Kawarau Gorge. All right. We are doing three things. We're maintaining the tourist experience, or improving it, in fact. We're improving road safety, and we're stopping untreated animal effluent going into what are there largely sealed water tables and pipe discharge systems going straight to the Kawarau River. That's what we're doing by building the stead there. Building a stead at Terrace, as I've said before, is a bit silly on the basis that it will service traffic from Canterbury, and ECAN have in the past expressed a willingness to build a dump site on the other side of the Linders Pass. Fair cost. Don't know why we've never really responded to that. So that's my motion, and it has a seconder.
Hey, I'll just check with Liz the wording of the motion.
Can you repeat it to me, please?
I know. Oh, heck, I'd have to try and read my writing again. Could be difficult. Okay, that we cease work on the Terrace site, that we complete detailed design for the stead on the Rippenvale Strait, provide CODC with plans, and proceed to construction under the existing contract.
Thank you.
I'd like to raise a point of order.
Just before you do, can I just ask Dr. Palmer, the negotiations with NZTA regarding the Terrace site, where are they at? Is there an agreement signed or drafted or... Just 1 minute.
Mr. Chairman, the negotiations with NZTA are around funding. They're not about site selection. NZTA was very happy and preferred the State Highway 6 Rippenvale site. So it's not a negotiation around site, but rather around the further funding that is needed for a stead anywhere. And that would be applicable to any further site. The other thing that is happening is that a landowner adjacent to the NZTA land at Terrace occupies that NZTA land, and so there's some negotiation around them relinquishing their licence to occupy. Okay. So at the moment it's just really a desktop exercise. There's no commitment at the minute at Terrace to anything on the ground.
Okay.
There is time available for committee to change the site.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Palmer. Now, before I go to Councillor Woodhead, if he wants to speak in support of Councillor Kempton's motion, Councillor Laws, have you got a point of order?
Yes,
did I hear you correctly?
we have a motion which we've passed as a council. There was no previous notification of this motion to overturn another council motion at all. It's just been sprung on us now. I'm pretty sure under standing orders that if we're going to overturn existing council policy, you are required to give prior notice. So that's the first thing I wanted to clarify.
Notice of motion is so many days in advance.
Correct. Five, is it?
Five?
Yeah.
5 business days.
Thank you. So we haven't received 5 prior days. And the reason I raise this issue, normally I'm not a procedural man, as you know.
But
I'm not a procedural man at all, only when it suits me. In this particular case, the information that Dr. Palmer has provided is false. And that's what has let Mr. Councillor Kempton go off. I have here a letter.
Hang on. We're just going to have to be careful about allegations. We need to be careful. So what you can call this a warning, but just refrain from any allegations of a suggestion of misleading the committee.
Okay, I'm not aspersing any particular characteristics to motive here. I'm just saying it's not correct.
I thought you were dealing with a point of order, Mr. Chair.
This is the reason why I put the point of order in, Stephen. I've got a letter here dated the 16th of August 2019, which is from the New Zealand Transport Agency, which is germane to this conversation. And I know why Trevor's set off, because he's relying upon the information that's either in here or he's read in the ODT. Unfortunately, he doesn't have all the information
not
which is provided
to the point
by
of order, Mr.
Chair. Can you come to the point?
Sure.
Come to the crux of what's
okay, so that's
what's
the reason
letter.
Why I'm saying I'm implementing this. If you had this information and you had this letter and I want to table it for you so that you can distribute it to all councillors, then you would have all the information.
Okay, so let's go back a couple of steps. A notice of motion, essentially the standing orders, a notice of motion would require 5 days.
Five clear working days.
It would have to be, we'd have to be informed as, we'd have to be, receive that 5 days in advance of this committee. So that doesn't meet the threshold. Obviously, we've just heard about Councillor Kempton and Councillor Woodhead's motion right here and now. So I have no choice as the committee chair to, I've got to adhere to standing orders. So I'm afraid that abiding by our rules, we must follow that procedure.
Mr. Chair, the Councillor Laws has raised some evidence. At the very least, he should articulate the paragraph that's got lines all around it.
Hang on, Councillor Scott. I need to deal with the procedural matter first, in my view. And if that letter needs to be circulated to the committee, that can happen. I don't want to create a debate about the procedural matter. And as Councillor Neil has just reminded me, we need to deal with that first. Okay. So I will rule that it is not valid, the motion that's been put by Councillor Kempton, seconded by Councillor Woodhead. So moving on, do we need to discuss this letter is the question in my mind.
Can I just table it and then it can be circulated to all members and then it can be added to the additional information so that if Councillor Kempton wishes to move that motion, he's got all the information available to him.
Can I just ask whether that letter is, who's it addressed to?
It's addressed to me, Councillor Michael Laws, Otago Regional Council.
You want to share that with the rest of the team?
I can.
Yeah, I think you should.
I'm just trying to be helpful. My suggestion was, in light of this report, not that the previous motion that Council's had to be overturned, but that another recommendation be added to the report, which is that for the council meeting coming forward, we bring back the information about the site on State Highway 6 for council to further consider.
So relitigate the issue?
If you so wanted to. That wouldn't be trying to reverse.
Anything we can do is the next council meeting.
Yes, that's right, but it's not reversing a motion. It's just simply asking staff to bring back a report so that you could then debate it.
So what, Councillor Neil, what's the view? Can I get a view about that process that the Chief Executive suggested? Councillor Neil.
I'm not totally au fait with procedure, but I would imagine Councillor Kent would still be well within his rights to move a notice of motion here and now that the matter be brought up at the next council meeting of the 25th.
Yep.
So I'm not required to, I mean, the other alternative is just simply to go through the notice of motion process.
Yes, you can.
Prior to the council meeting.
Yes.
But if I can move in that direction now, standing orders allows me to do that, then I'll do that.
I'm happy to second that.
So if you can email that to Sarah, your notice of motion. Thank you.
In the meantime, can I table the letter and it can be distributed to all my peers?
Let's just deal with the... Are you moving a motion or are you moving a notice of motion to come forward at the next council meeting?
I need some assistance from you as to what I can move right now.
Well, Councillor Neil's just suggested that you... My understanding is that you are suggesting to Councillor Kempton that he...
Giving notice of motion.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Or Mr. Chairman, you can add it to the recommendations of this committee report.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay.
Probably better.
It's probably easier as a result. So we note this report and...
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. I'll deal with this now and then we'll note the report at the end. But any discussion?
So what was the actual motion?
So my understanding is that you've asked for you're going to submit a notice of motion within the time frame to meet the standing orders for the next council meeting. Is that correct?
Now, one thing I need to be very clear on is that if I today note that, I still have to go through the written process.
Yes, that's correct.
Yep.
Okay, well, that's fine. It makes no difference what I do today.
No, that's
yep.
right.
That's right. Well, let's forget that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. We'll submit a notice of motion. That's fine. I thought there might have been a short circuit. That was
no. Okay. Sorry.
So we note that that's your intent.
It's my intent.
Okay, righto. Councillor Scott, is this on this matter?
Yes, on this matter. And if this matter is going to, and I've got my doubts, but if it's going to be relitigated, just all I can ask staff is please re-provide the information, the key parts of the information, Opus report, boom, boom, boom. So we're not, so we've got all the information. Thank you.
Okay. And ask... give prior notice to the Central Otago District Council, who will be affected by our decision and have been a party to this.
And in your private capacity, Council Laws, you'll
and I'll be happy to
circulate
table this.
That. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll table this to all colleagues in the meantime.
Excellent. Thank you. Right. Moving on. No further discussion on that matter.
Share the firewood.
If he gets his...
notice of motion.
His
notice of motion.
Effluent...
Stead.
Stock effluent.
Stead. Are we going to name it the Trevor Kenton Shite Hole or what? Is that what this is all about?
It's all about try to do the right thing in circumstances that are moved.
It's leaving a legacy.
Righto.
On a clean road.
Moving on, paragraph 9. Executive Leadership Team Rural Outreach Sessions. I take that as read. Any comments? That will be a good, no doubt, a good discussion with the liaison team and out there in the Central Otago community. Councillor Hope.
Not communities, local catchments groups. So you're going right out to the communities, obviously there. Tauri, North Otago, Western South. Oh, yeah, no, it's good. It's all right. I just wanted to check. I did read it, but as you were.
Thank you. Councillor Brown.
I don't want to pour cold water on this, but is the timing right for this, given it's just before an election rather than after an election?
You've got lemming too, haven't you?
Chief Executive.
It's an operational conversation. So the whole idea behind it is I meet with the catchment group leaders from time to time, have done twice in the last 12 months. As a part of that, I ask them about whether or not this kind of outreach would be useful. Each of the catchment groups have come back to us about doing it in a different way, and it's by invitation from them to us. We're obviously not going to be talking about anything political. What we'll be talking about is the priorities that we've already got set for the year, the changes to 6A that have been proposed and that you have already made a decision on, and also what's come from central government out of water. Primarily, I think that some of the things that people will want to ask us questions about. For the most part, it's an opportunity for the full exec team, because we'll have the whole exec team in place. Gwyneth will be with us for one day, to go out and meet and basically meet and greet, and start to develop that relationship with those groups. So I thought it was okay.
Thank you. Moving on to the next item, Roxburgh Debris Flow Update. Ben, is would you like to talk to this report?
Sure. So the intention here was to provide an update on some ongoing work that we initiated following the flooding up near Roxburgh in November 2017. The most the primary part of it was we had a report that's been done over the past 6 months or so, looking at the state of the catchments and the likely future behaviour, and a second part looking at some potential engineering measures that could be taken to reduce the long-term risk there. And so with that report, our plan is to review that and come back to a subsequent meeting later this year with some recommended options and potential funding mechanisms. In other work that's going on up there, also working pretty closely with NZTA, because they've got a lot of culverts which cross these creeks and have blocked up in the past. They're doing their own work, their own assessment of the culverts, and I think are moving in the direction of trying to upgrade some of those. And other work that's upcoming, some of the easier or less cost measures that were recommended by Golda, we're planning to pick those up over the coming months, notably removing some of the sediment that's accumulated at the bottom of a reservoir creek in Roxburgh there.
And that's work that's deemed operational,
yeah,
to ensure that the culverts are working efficiently and to the capacity or as best they can.
After the recent events, there was a build-up of sediment at the base of the concrete flume there, and the recommendation was if we remove a lot of that, it will minimise the potential for future sediment build-up there. It'll basically provide a straight path for any future flows to go straight to the river. A lot of the issues have been that the flume itself works very well, but when the fast-moving water hits the clutha, the sediment drops out just with the drop in velocity and starts accumulating, and then that works backwards up the flume, gradually filling up the flume and reducing capacity.
So thank you, Ben. Did you want to put figure 4 or 5 up, because there may be councillors that have some questions? Go to Councillor Woodhead and...
Yeah, so the first question is, do we actually need to remove that from the river system, that plume of sediment, or can we just move it out of the road, leave it in the river essentially, but get it out of the road of the end of the flume so it's able to, the next load of sediment's able to flow through? And the reason I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek is that we don't have the sediment source feeding down the clutha anymore, and this is sort of nature at work, do we need to actually extract it from the river system?
We've looking at two options. One is to essentially shift it laterally, yep, downstream on the bank.
Yep.
The second is actually trucking it off-site.
Yep.
And they're both things we could do under our consent when it becomes operative in October.
Right. So that's good. So you're thinking about leaving it in the river system?
One of the options would be to distribute it laterally along the bank there.
Yeah. And if I may, Mr. Chairman, the other question I had was, a lot of detail in these reports, a comprehensive amount of work being done by consultants, photographing, mapping, understanding the upper catchment. These catchments are all, these hillsides are always going to struggle with high-intensity rainfall events such as this. But there was some reference in the report to reseeding, some planting, perhaps some methods to assist manage the impacts at times. Have you got any feeling for that, or any comment to make at this point, or is that be something that will come through later?
Yeah, they did look at that sort of, I suppose, catchment stabilisation would be the term. It can be done actively on a small scale,
yep.
Such as you might see on an individual slip. You can use soil nails or actual structures to hold the sediment. The scale of these catchments would make that impractical. The probably longer term option is potentially a reforestation or something like that, but it leaves a window of potentially 10 or 20 years of vulnerable erosion.
Laws. And then Councillor Scott, then Councillor Neil.
One of the things I haven't noticed in this report is legal responsibility. There's a well-known case called Ryder and Fletcher, which is when you let something escape from your land and it causes damage on another, you're responsible. And it's a fundamental tenet of land law. So what's happening here is that there's a weather event happening on a piece of land or lands. It's accumulating into particular areas and it's causing systemic damage further on down the line, including of public roading, but also off public asset. Have you done any legal work here as to responsibilities of whom? Because I'm already seeing or questioning the responsibility of NZTA around culverts, for example. If their work is exacerbating this, then... And they're aiming to go, according to this paper, to, I guess, the next budget round and asking for some money, and they're going to be in a contestable fund and they may not get it, then the reality is that that culvert implementation will not occur. So, CODC, private landowners, ORC, NZTA, they're the four players in this. Where does the legal responsibilities rest for the damage caused by weather events at Roxburgh and the damage that is thus caused?
Questions for Dr.
I can answer that. So there's a shared responsibility here on Reservoir Creek, which is figure four. It's got a good photograph there. In the distance, you can see the concrete flume. That concrete flume is owned by CODC. So they have some responsibilities around maintenance, renewal, that kind of thing.
So CODC are responsible for that flume. That's in the town?
Yes, that's Reservoir Creek. That's the main creek through town.
What about the one that's on the golf course leading down to Roxburgh?
Yes, so there's no flume there, but there was a perched culvert, and that culvert's now been removed. I've seen that. I've driven past, and that's good. It was an impediment to flow. It also served another purpose. It was acting as a pipe bridge for municipal water main. I think that's been worked through. So that's been sorted. This council has a function under the Soil Conservation Rivers Control Act to minimise and prevent damage within Otago by floods and erosion. So we have the responsibility to assess issues and make a judgement call as to what issues we will intervene in and how we will go about that. So we don't have a responsibility to ensure there's zero risk everywhere, but we do have a responsibility to make sure we've considered the risk and gone through a good process, and that's what we're doing here.
But does the legal responsibility lie with the CODC? You have an overview responsibility you've just described to me then. Does the legal responsibility for ensuring there is not damage to property or public asset and the sediment that goes into there, is that the CODC's legal responsibility?
Well, we don't have a responsibility to ensure there's no damage. It's not about ensuring there is zero risk or zero damage. It'll have a level of service, a finite capacity. It won't be big enough to cater for every flood. It'll be big enough to cater for most floods. And so the duty is to maintain it to its design standard, if you like. this is a bit unusual where we've got a district council owned feature embedded in a natural water course where we would have, we would be the lead agency in terms of managing the flood risk of this water course. With CODC dealing with its little piece of it, the concrete lining, and Transit NZTA dealing with its culverts.
Yeah, what about, seriously, the golf course?
Yep.
You say it was fixed. I drove past there, it must be about 3 months ago, and it was flooded,
yep.
And it was, there were work, the road was closed, there were workmen trying to scoop the rocks out and everything like that. So that's still an ongoing problem, isn't it?
No, it's been fixed. When I drove past last week, I observed it had been removed. So that's been resolved.
All right. Well, until the next rain event. And then that will be the real test, won't it?
No, they've fully removed the culvert, the obstructing feature.
So there's two culverts, one above the other. The culvert that remains is still potentially undersized.
So you're saying there will be no more problems of flooding across State Highway 6 by the golf course?
No, we're not saying that. In fact, I'm saying the opposite. There will always be a risk of flooding and damage on every water course, even with mitigation, and particularly this one, which is a very dynamic, debris-laden channel. What we have identified, though, is that we need to be really, really clear about what the residual risk is. What is the true risk for this community, and what are the design standards we're maintaining this water course to? So part of the goal to work is to inform coming up with target design cross-sections, if you like, for the natural water course, and then ensuring that we maintain the channel to those. And we'll have some discretion around that, and it's something with the community to decide how big to make the channel, because the bigger we wish to maintain it, the more expensive it will be. But even with that, there will always be a residual risk. This channel will always have a risk of breakout and damage to property.
So when you say the community, is that the Teviot Community Board?
No, we are working through the community board, but I'm talking more generally about... I'm talking about residents on the fan.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I'm just, through the chair, Dr. Palmer, like, wearing your technical hat, looking at the ecology of the river, obviously it happens in hundreds and hundreds of rivers around New Zealand, but nevertheless, the sediment plume that's going down that creek into the Clutha cannot be good for the Clutha River, yeah? I mean, it might sit up behind the Roxburgh Dam and actually the Roxburgh Dam's above
it. It's a bit of a problem being above the Roxburgh Dam.
Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, so this is going to go all the way.
St Clair Beach.
Yeah, we had a presentation quite recently from the Penguin people, and one of their issues was the amount of sediment that was going in the inner sea and the loss of habitat for the penguins. Is there something more we can do to actually stop the sediment going into the creek? I mean, is it a significant issue or not is the first question. And secondly, if it is there anything we can do about it, planting the headlands?
So we're approaching this from a flood risk point of view. We're not...
Yeah, no, that's my point.
Yeah, these are just natural processes that happen in the Clutha.
Only because we put a blooming hydro slide at the bottom.
No.
If we don't allow the sediment to arrive into the Clutha River, it's going to accumulate in the channel, as it did in November 2017, and the channel will break out. And there will be substantial amounts of debris strewn across the fan. Yes. So the purpose of our work is to create capacity and to manage that sediment transfer, which is going to happen anyway, regardless of planting and concrete linings and the like. It's just going to happen. That's just normal. That's how the fan was created in the first place, and the fan is continuing to form despite the development on it. It's about managing that sediment transfer from the upper catchment down through the fan and out to the Clutha River, which is a natural process and can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. It's a good thing in the sense of causing beaches to accrete. If you cut off all the sediment supply in the Clutha River, then you'll have substantial erosion. But that's not what we're about. We're just managing the flood risk on the fan. That's our responsibility.
Councillor Neil.
I was just smoothing my hair, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Deegan, sorry.
It worked. I know this is probably a silly question, Gavin and Ben, but in the Lindsay Creek, we very successfully, as far as I can tell, installed two sediment traps many years ago, and we regularly clear them out. And as far as I can recall, there hasn't been a problem in the Lindsay Creek since, which is probably a meteorological accident, but that's beside the point. It seems to me these two channels could benefit from the same treatment, or am I completely wrong about that?
So Dr. Mackey will probably make a comment about whether that's been looked at. In respect of Lindsay Creek, our debris traps are more intended for woody debris to trap trees so they don't find their way down to the many bridges. There's about 12 bridges across the Lee. So it's,
but they would also stop boulders rolling down if there were any boulders to roll down, wouldn't they?
They do, and so they also trap boulders. But one of the careful considerations about debris traps like on Lindsay Creek is you've still got to let the flow get round and through them. Yeah. And we've been able to do that on Lindsay Creek. I'm not sure the topography would allow that, but Dr. Mackey could comment on that.
Yeah, Golder looked at potential debris basins, essentially. They're dotted around big cities like Los Angeles that have similar catchments to this. Part of the problem is the creeks are quite steep, so it's a geometric problem in that if you put a wall up, it can only hold, can't hold that much. Also here, the sediment flux or the amount of sediment going down here is probably one or two orders of magnitude greater than Lindsay Creek, I would guess. In that 2017 event on this creek, contractors told me they trucked off 50,000 cubic metres of sediment, and that's excluding the stuff that went into the river itself. So it's just the volume and size and velocity of sediment is very difficult to control.
Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Kempton.
No, it's all been covered.
Excellent. Thank you. No further discussion on that
yes,
topic? Oh, Councillor Hope.
Dr. Palmer, I've asked this question a couple of times and no, Councillor Bell's asked it. We asked you about the tussocks and all the high country behind it. You talked about forestation. Is there anything, though, that now you would look at above that is different from before? I mean, it just shows you 40 years, look what can happen. We've had nothing and then... You know, this has happened. But is there anything up there that will end up changing or you can see is going to change topography or geographically wise, like as in we talked about the tussocks and things like that, you know, they get taken out?
I'll get Dr. Mackey to comment on the vegetation, but these processes have been happening forever. That's how the fan has been formed. And, you know, even in our report, we show the event in 1978, and there will be many other events, so it's not particularly linked to presence or absence of vegetative cover. It's a more fundamental process that's happening.
Okay.
This is probably one of the most lightly grazed catchments in the area as well, so it's...
not getting a hard time.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Moving on to the next item, the Leith Flood Protection Scheme. Just an update there. Dr. Palmer's got a smile on his face. He's on the home straight.
It was an easy one.
Yeah, it is. Of course. Obviously, just a critical stage and getting all those concrete culvert in placement or the sections, precast concrete in place and secure and all the rest of it. So... Everything trucking on well?
Yeah, yes, it is, and it is a milestone. All the units are now in place.
Right.
What the contractor is doing now is stitching them together with the grout, as they do. And as I've noted in my report, that's a milestone because the job now starts to get out of the base of the river, and so therefore it's less vulnerable to floods as they come through. So that means it's less disruptive to the program and starts to reduce our cost risk.
Excellent. And no concern from a health and safety point of view from adjacent dwellers, residential dwellers?
Well, we've never had concern from adjacent residential dwellers, to the best of my knowledge, but we still have acts of entry and vandalism occasionally.
I was talking to the campus. Okay. No further discussion? Councillor Hope and Councillor Deacon.
Oh, sorry.
No, you go to Councillor Deacon.
When Dr. Palmer mentioned grouting and stitching them together, this may be part of the answer, but how do you stop these big culverty things from floating downstream? How are they clawed into the bed?
So that they rely on, it's a very good question, because durability of these works is really, really important given the issues we've just discussed around debris. So they're relying on mass. They do have foundations, and they do rely on being keyed into solid material. There's been some renewal of the foundation. And then, of course, the thing is kind of backfilled and held in position by the ground pressure each side.
Councillor Hope.
Well, it's good because you've actually answered three-quarters of my question, but of course the other question was the ceiling as well. How do you, are you looking also to stop any leakage as well? You talked about the relying on the mass of the solid material. What about when the water flows down? How are you going to know it's not going to leak? What do you guys do?
So, through Mr. Chairman, the leaks are not, in this type of structure, are not really a problem, only if they start to wash out the fines that are underneath it and you get internal erosion. But it's all grouted up, so it should be watertight. Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, we're all set. Thank you very much, everybody, for your contribution. I really appreciate it. I will move that the report is received, or we receive this report, and also just noting that Councillor Kempton will submit a notice of motion regarding the Rippenvale Strait Stead site for discussion at the council meeting in 2 weeks' time.
Oh, God.
And seconded by Councillor Lawton.
Well, he may not. When
he sees
the letter.
Yes, it is. We're just noting it.
Non-latitude.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you for your achievements over the last 3 years.
Yes, indeed. Well done, Andrew.